Chartoff, your host of Film Wax Radio. It's Thursday, January 9th, 2020, and this is episode 593 of the podcast. I'm delighted to welcome back some friends to the podcast. You know, I'm very loyal. The show is loyal to its family of guests over the years. I really enjoy being able to invite people back on regularly, as frequently as possible, and this episode is no exception. A bunch of creative people got together in the hopes of starting a new series. They got this great concept for an urban comedy and sort of leaning against old comedy tropes, if you will, but to update it into a really, really topical and relevant show. And that is The Holdouts. They've shot the pilot and now they're trying to sell it and have it produced by one of the streaming platforms, I suppose. That's the most likely scenario. So right now, if you go to Vimeo, or after listening to the pursuant conversation with these guys, if you feel like you want to see it, you can go to Vimeo.com, Vimeo, and search The Holdouts, or just Google The Holdouts Vimeo, and it should come up. We have on the show the director of this pilot, anyway, and I assume the series, Stephen Girasuolo, as well as he's also a writer on the show, and his co-writer, Dan Menke, will be joining us, as well as his two primary actors in the series, both of whom have been on this show multiple times. We have Jace Bartok, who I think this is his fourth visit, and regardless, I'm sure there will be a fifth and a sixth. He was actually on recently, because he was on the Ava DuVernay Netflix series When They See Us, and he came on to talk about that not too long ago. And Jace is back on because of this new, what I hope to be, episodic called The Holdouts. And he is joined here as well by his co-star, the Oscar to his Felix, if you will, Kevin Corrigan, who is also, this is, I think, Kevin's third visit to the show. Most recently, Kevin was on with Ariel Cavusi regarding a short she made in which he co-starred with Kevin, and we have Kevin back on. Now, the setup here, the show is called The Holdouts, and that's because these are two old friends who share a cruddy New York City apartment, but it may have nothing nice about it except that it's cheap and it's theirs, and the owners of the building are hoping to buy out everybody in the building in order to renovate the building or replace it and make a huge amount of money, just like so many other people in real life here in New York City have done. Except the whole question here is, will these guys refuse? Will they, in fact, be holdouts? Because everybody else in the building has sold out, except for these two guys. They've all taken the money and moved out, but these two guys are the last. And so what happens? And there's a lovely cast, including Michael Buscemi and Deirdre O'Connell and Daphne Rubin Vega, who herself has been on the show, as well as Nadia Dejani and a host of other folks, including, I should mention, director Stephen Girasuolo in a small supporting role. So let's get into it now. Again, go to Vimeo and find the show and watch it. And I think you'll get behind it, and maybe we can get a campaign going or something, because these guys are so creative and so smart, they deserve a shot at getting the series made, I think. So let's get into this conversation. We met at Steve's brand new apartment. He had just moved in Manhattan, maybe the night before, and we all met there, and over cold pizza and good conversation, we had a good time. And this is what the conversation is. Again, this is Stephen Girasuolo, Dan Menke, Jace Bartok, Kevin Corrigan, and myself here on Film Wax Radio, The Holdouts.
calamity do I have to thank for a visit from my nephew? You need money?
Oh, no, I got a lot of money coming at me.
A lot of money. That's the problem.
Oh, to be you.
You know, they're selling the building. Selling.
I was wondering how long you would hold out. What are they offering? 50, 60? More?
500.
Oh, Jesus! Wow. Sign it. Take the cash. Cash out, man.
You know, that's like you make it sound like it's the obvious thing to do. I can't do that. It's not.
Why?
My mother grew up there, and my father lived there. My uncle Ron, like before them,
yeah,
lived there.
Yeah, they're all gone now. The block is dead. Look, even your sister moved on.
What if I sell? What's gonna happen to that place?
Who cares? Why are you looking at me like that? What? Okay, I'm not here to tell you what you want to hear. I'm here to tell you what's right.
As not Joyce, but Jace. Not Jason.
Not Bartok.
No.
Bartok.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not Bar.
I feel I'm in Bartokia.
See, it's starting up this nonsense. No, I'm just kidding. You should be able to just say or do anything you wish, because that's you know, anything's allowed.
Anything's allowed.
Anything. Anything goes. You want to break into song, poetry, you want to read a poem, you want to, whatever you want to do.
Now that it's gone, this beautiful day.
Cast a cold eye on life, on death, the horsemen pass by.
What is that from?
Yeats.
Oh, that's a first on the podcast. So seriously, you do exactly what I said not to do. So no, somebody hold it. If you're going to hold it, hold it. If you're going to talk.
I wasn't ready for the Yeats bit.
I don't mean to scold. Anyway, the holdouts, would you describe it? Somebody describe. Is it a web series?
Over to you, Gita Swallow.
Yes, over to you.
It was meant to be a web series when Dan and I first wanted to do this, you know, to write it. But, you know, it's an episodic TV series, you know. We wanted to do a full half-hour pilot,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we thought it had the weight to do that. You know, there's great characters, good story, and a lot of relevant topics like, you know, hyper-gentrification and disappearing middle class of New York. So we felt we could really, that it was more than like 5 or 10 minute episodes, you know.
Yeah.
That there was an actual real story that was kind of, you know, that people all around the country could kind of relate to, because it's like happening everywhere.
That is true. To go back to the weights and what we're calling this kind of platformer series, because a typical web series is supposed to be 5 or 10 minutes, but there, I don't know if there's rules around that or common understandings around what it makes a web series versus something else. But now that so much stuff is on the internet anyway, it's you could just say this is a series. You don't have to go further, right?
I think it is. It's a series. It's got the weight for a series, and we felt that when we did the pilot, which is like a prototype. But when we did the pilot, we knew right away that it was a series.
And it's called The Holdouts. And what does it refer to? The title? Does anyone? Dan. Okay, so let me. Oh, I should have. I only got to Stephen Giraswolo.
That's okay.
And Nina Laha, Dan Mankey, Jason. Oh, I did go around. Okay, and me. I'm Adam Sharkov. So, Dan, what do you want to describe the storyline?
Why it's called The Holdouts?
Yeah, and what the series is about.
I think what we were referring to is, from our own experience, we're being like just the last people holding out on your block that, or in your building. Like in Steve's case, they kept trying to light it on fire to get him out.
Mm. Well, you know. Right. Well, real estate is, there are a lot of people that are living in a lot of older buildings, say, that have that are rent stabilized or rent controlled, and the owners would like nothing better but to kick out those people and then bring in people so they can increase the rent exponentially and up to market value, whatever, right? Or sell it, even maybe. So, well, I guess an owner wouldn't do that, but they would maybe want to change the terms of the place.
Yeah, well, they'll do anything to try to get you out. I mean, I think
so.
You know,
that's what this premise.
Kevin and I both live in the Hell's Kitchen. I had like homeless people sleeping.
They'll do anything.
They'll do anything.
So this happened to you?
I heard a story about someone knocking on like a wall like the owner was like tapping on the wall.
Oh, it's like,
did we talk about that to keep the person up the whole night? Like a torture.
It's
like
a torture method.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, there's a
it's like what is called
stars.
A thousand stab. What's it called?
Death by a thousand death by cuts.
By what?
Death by a thousand cuts.
That's it. That's what it is. It's like that.
Yeah.
Kevin, did you experience that?
I had an apartment on 51st Street between 9th and 10th, but from 1996 till 2012. And I think the landlord wanted me out about halfway through that time.
Mm.
I had an inn at the realtor's office. My cousin Gene's best friend was the landlord's favorite employee. She had influence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, I would let people stay at the apartment, and
like when you were not there, you mean?
When I was not there,
right? When you worked,
yeah. And they you know, now I know they were never once fooled. It all came back to get me in the end, you know, after Luann sadly passed away. So I no longer had someone protecting me up at the landlord's office, and I started getting, I got a letter of eviction, and they said, you know, you can, you know, I was like, what do I do? Fight it, you know. It was going to be a process,
right? And that's another point.
Costly process. People,
I mean,
even if you might even have the, I don't know, not, I don't know if it's law, but you might have, you might be legally in a safe position, but do you want to live in a hostile environment? And it can get very hostile,
and
which
it's
is what
unsafe
the series
unsafe environment
can.
Too. I mean, it gets really unsafe. Like they were lighting fires in my building. There was they sort
this
of,
happened to you. So this is based on your experiences.
Yeah, you know, not just to like
Steven.
Throw it in there. And this is all of our experiences. But when just understanding, you know, with Dan and I started to talk about the series, it was supposed to be based. We were trying to make a rule in the writers' room that was based on things that really happened to us. So that was our entry point in it, because we realized that it was happening to a lot of people, so why not start? That's where we're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
It both happened to us, you know, and now it happened to Kevin.
Yes.
As well, I mean, that could be something to explore, like all those stories when we do more episodes, because I think they make the richest stories, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I and that's what's more Damn. Hilarious than New York real estate.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in an apartment. It was the mafia. It was their bachelor pad. And we weren't allowed to do. You're not allowed to decorate, you guys. You can live here, but you can't decorate. That's what they would say.
It's a Swedish accent, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Via Canal Street.
Nothing on the walls. You put a nail in a wall. Put a nail in your coffin.
Right. They would come by and like give us free vegetables and stuff every now and then. It was a very weird setting.
I think, you know, it was a combination of like this kind of stories, but also we, you know, and Dan knew Kevin and Jace and really well. And it was like, how do we write for these two great actors and make it, you know, and like unearth all this crazy anger in the town, because everyone was really angry about what's happening. Right. But it's funny underneath. Right. So just turn
right.
It around.
There's a it's a comedy. It's for the fans of The Odd Couple. Took me 15 minutes to realize that you meant Felix Unger. So I tried to do
That's
a little impression.
That's
Thank
not
you.
Bad at all.
Thank you.
But you're really blessing my apartment tonight. I feel very lucky.
So, Jace and Kevin, really well cast. But how did you
Thank
guys?
You. Great actors.
What?
They're great actors.
That's very sweet of you.
I agree. So, how did you guys get?
Kevin and I know each other from like the waiting rooms.
Jace.
This is Jace. Of many famous movie waiting rooms, and I'm always like, oh, when Kevin walks
waiting
in, I'm
room?
Like. Yeah, like auditioning,
That's
you know, like waiting to go in and meet the director room. Mm-hmm. And Kevin will always come in after me, which makes me, I'm on time, so he must be really late. And he comes in, and I see Kevin walk in, and I go, oh, hey, man. And he goes, hey. He sits down, and we just have this thing. I don't know if we have ever really had, we have a good friend, Lee Holmes, in common. Mm-hmm. But Kevin and I never, but somehow we were on this talk show, right? Remember? Dan, to the right of me, has a talk show.
Co-writer of the series.
Yeah. Called The Artie Need Show, where a little marionette hosts a show. And it's the funniest thing you've ever seen. And he's the little marionette's kind of like a Joe Allen. Joe Franklin.
Joe Franklin.
And so he has these guests, and it's the funniest thing you've ever seen.
Really? What is it called?
It's all over Brooklyn.
The Artie Need Show.
The Artie Need Show. It's a talk show, and he has a band, and he has guests. And Kevin and I were on
the
show. Who's the
last to find out? Go ahead.
Yeah, we were on the show.
Oh, okay.
And then we did a pilot for the show. Remember? And then all this time, Dan was like, I want to write something for you and Kevin. And I thought he was completely insane because no one has ever wanted to write anything for me. They might have for Kevin because that would seem like a logical thing. But for me, not so much.
I don't know.
And he kept this dream alive. And I would like have a coffee with him. And I would think, this poor man, he's so sweet. He's so funny. But he's delusional. And then he's like, I have this idea. You're going to play yourselves. And you're both actors, right? You're both actors. And I said, great, whatever you want to do, that's great. Nobody's ever written anything for me. And then you actually came up with this plan that we're not actors, but we got together with Steven. You came up with this holdouts idea, but we were still Kevin and Jace, which
that's
I thought.
That's right. I was going to, we do have our own names in the show.
Yeah.
That's correct. That's how creative we got with the names.
Yeah. And then you guys had some money that you got in a bag from somebody. Remember you and we shot literally like a minute of it on a night like this, a rainy night, and everyone loved this minute so much. Like people are still talking about this minute.
And then, still talking.
And then you got enough money to make the pilot.
That's right.
Dan Menke, this is Kevin Corrigan. Dan Menke and I we talked about I would send you articles by Jeremiah Moss from Vanishing New York blog, Vanishing New York, because it was like everything was closing. They're still closing. It's just become a way of life now. Process the foreclosures of all these classic places that, you know, had like these 70-year leases and then the people buy the air rights to places and whole neighborhoods are rezoned. And you know there's the going back to Ed Koch, you know, setting the stage for Giuliani with the rezoning Times Square, you know, said it eventually it went from like the Deuce to being what it is now. But you know, this is like decades in the works, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the whole city is like a huge pie that's being divvied up over decades.
That's exactly right.
And you don't realize that you know we're all subject to these unseen forces.
Again, the thousand deadly cuts, because there's always gentrification in any city. It's just a natural thing that happens over a course of time with immigration, economy, all these different factors, and there's a natural thing. And it's not always optimal for certain people, of course, because maybe poor people do get pushed out. But there is a more organic, at least, explanation for it. What's been going on in cities, especially like New York City and others, is a plotted out thing between it's not conspiratorial to say that developers and politicians are plotting this out. So people are getting, and neighborhoods are getting fucked in the process. So I've seen it going on and been ranting about it for ages. And so we have a city that looks nothing like, or feels nothing like it did when. And how many of you guys are New Yorkers?
I actually am. No one ever thinks
Jason
I am.
Jason is from Lower Manhattan. Right?
Yeah, from the Village in Soho, and which I thought was so much fun because my character is a new arrival, and I think like Chipotle and City Bike are the greatest inventions. And
they are.
And I can't wait till the Starbucks and the everything just gets closer and closer, and I'm just oblivious to what Kevin's character knows. But I actually love the project because we came here when I was like 10.
Oh wow!
To the Village in the 80s. And you know, the city obviously is completely different. So I love that, you know, the way that the project sends all that up and explores where the city's going and what it was and what it's become.
Don't feel afraid to take the mic next time. Just
you had like that sort of art, you know, that art environment of Soho and I'm from the Bronx. I'm from up by DeWitt Clinton, Bronx Science, Marshallu Parkway. Mm-hmm. And but the story takes place in Hell's Kitchen. So I did live in Hell's Kitchen on 51st Street. But my character actually owns the building or has some stake in the building.
Right.
He's inherited it from the family.
Yeah, your parents, you grew up there, right? Your right. parents, and it's been in the family.
They're trying to buy him out.
He was actually conceived there as well.
Right. And
as a idea, not as a person.
I remember across the street from me on 51st Street, Bruno Kirby, the actor, owned an apartment in one of the brownstones across the street. And I would see him all the time. He was like, "You belong to a gym. You should really join a gym. You know, you should go to my gym." And he was like, "If you ever want to, you know, go down to the Amish market. They have the best sandwiches. I go there. I get sandwiches. I go up to Yankee Stadium with the sandwiches. It's a great neighborhood." He grew up there. As a kid, he grew up on 51st Street. His father was an actor. And he was known as the actor's son.
I was wondering,
how
did he get into The Godfather? I mean, he was a comedian.
He was a, you know,
comic actor.
Indigenous to the city, you know, like a hometown.
Maybe he knew Marty.
Celeb, and, you know. I'm sure he was, you know, go figure, you know, in the mid-70s, early 70s, 60s. He probably goes back to the 60s, that guy.
Sure. But I don't know if he was a child actor, but he started very young. He did start very young.
Yeah,
I remember that. I was seeing him in Bruno Kirby.
Yeah. But what else was I going to say about? So he had that. You know, he was like my character, in that he owned the building and he was good. Now there's this movie called the Battle for Brooklyn.
Michael Galinsky,
my friend.
Michael
Galinsky, yeah.
These are my friends. I showed. Go ahead.
But that movie was a huge influence on me.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a fan of his other films, but then I started watching the documentaries, and that one's just an amazing one about this guy, a real life holdout in what became the Barclays Center.
That's right.
There was a building there.
Goldstein.
Right.
Daniel Goldstein.
Right. The building, he formed a whole coalition, but one by one, they all kind of...
He was the last holdout.
Bought out and...
I didn't know you knew that documentary, but I was just texting with Michael on Friday, actually. He was here, and I was trying to get him to come to some party. But we should mention Suki and David Bailenson as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Co-produced and directed. It's amazing that you know that.
It seems like we were trying to take this basic idea of like the...
Yes,
you know,
it's
a very complicated issue, a complicated thing to try and tell a story about, you know? It's like, is it
good? Yes, and try to make it funny at the same time.
Yeah, but I think we were kind of going towards the first 20 minutes of Stripes kind of thing.
What?
You know, at Bill Murray and Harold Ramis.
We're back like, on that. Wait a minute. You know?
He's like, let me get your last beer. No. Oh, we'll split it. You know?
Yeah. You know? Maybe a little Gene Sachs, a little Neil Simon.
A little bit of that, sure.
There's definitely that. But the tension, there's a tension because it's a very, very intense subject, as you say, Kevin. And yet it is a comedy. And I think you're doing a good job. I only saw the pilot, though. But
Go ahead. No. I was saying that with the Pordor moment. Do you remember
the
moment?
I
thought they did such a good job.
Describe the scene.
And how funny it is. I take Kevin to see these lofts, these beautiful, super uber fancy lofts.
It'd be like Williamsburg on the river now.
Exactly. I think that's actually where we shot.
Yeah.
And we're getting a tour from this attractive real estate young maven woman, and she's showing us the wool washed refrigerator and the whisper drawers and the gas ranges. And then she looks at Kevin's character and says, "I know you're worried about the low income subsidized housing, and it's only at 3%.
It's a mixed income.
But we have the poor door, and it opens up this whole thing that's really ugly. And
it is.
My character is just so
it's real.
Oblivious.
You couldn't make it up, but it turns out.
Right. And that's what I thought was so compelling about the life of this series is to be able to get into stuff like that and explore really awkward and painful socioeconomic realities with this kind of odd couple set up.
I can tell something's bothering you, so let me level with you, okay? A lot of our tenants are worried about the number of subsidized apartments in this building, but we have managed to keep that number under 3%.
3%?
Now that you mention it, yes. That bothers me.
What's that?
A lot of our tenants worry about that, but I have to assure you that there won't be a problem. We have a standard separate elevator, so you won't have to worry about those tenants. You won't even know they're in the building. We call it the corridor. You've probably read the article in the Times.
Yes, yes, yes. I read that article in the New York Times.
So it's really just for peace of mind.
The corridor. The corridor. All these buildings have one now.
Why do they go through another door?
It's based on income.
Yeah, they keep all the low lives in one part of the building, and they use the corridor, and all the higher ups, you know, get. It's just, it's more that we can have. It's classist. It's racist.
It's a separate door?
That's where we're at as a city, and
does it lead to the same place?
You're a history teacher, and you don't know this. I'm getting really angry. It's just talking about it. Okay, I'm gonna go use the corridor. I'm poor, by the way, so I'm out of here. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of comedy that we really discuss, Dan and I. Like, what kind of comedy? You can take it, like, really slapstick, or, like, you know, you could take it many different ways. But the comedy had to come from real situation. It had to come from something that would resonate, you know, from the characters in a real situation.
Yeah.
Which we thought was the best comedy for us, to write. And for, you know, these guys are great. You know, the good actors that really bring a lot of layers to it, so we didn't want it to be so top level, high level, if that makes any sense. That it had to really be something like something real, like a poor door. You know, people can relate to it. It's crazy, right?
It absolutely is. It was in a meeting. There were a bunch of guys sitting around. Yeah. They talked about, we should have a door for people that are not, you know, who are paying less. They'll have to use that door to get in and out of the building. And that, you know, and that was approved. And they went ahead and did it. And so, you know, that's the city we live in.
And it's also crazy that people are really offering $500,000, $400,000, $300,000. I mean, many different stories around that. I mean, I think that Battle for Brooklyn, sorry, there was an offer there. I don't know the whole story, but...
Yes.
What was... Yeah, it was some astronomical number, right, that they offered him to move out?
Yeah, I think it was pretty big, yeah.
I mean, there was something in Red Hook recently, $1.2 million. I don't know.
The number in the series, again, it's called The Holdouts, directed by Steven Girasuolo.
I love it.
Co-written by Dan Mankey. They're offered, they've been the subjects of this hostility we're talking about by the owners of the building. The guys that own the building are trying to push them out, and finally they make this very, very astronomically high offer or bribe, whatever you want to call it, for Jace and Kevin to move out of the apartment. And that's the catalyst for the first episode, essentially. It's like, what do you do? It's an ethical dilemma. Do you take the money and run? Who wouldn't? On the other hand, then you're part of the problem.
Where do you go?
And where do you go? That's right.
Where do these people go? Where is everyone going? Like, where do they leave? Where do they go to for a buyout? What are you selling out? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
it sounds like a lot, $250,000 each or whatever, however it's split.
Yeah.
Certainly can you can probably buy a place, maybe not in New York, but somewhere. You can.
That's the thing about these.
If you have $250,000 in the bank, you can. You have to show how you're going to be able to pay the mortgage. You have to have income. There's a lot of components to it. But anyway, I don't want to get into too much.
I mean, we're at a time where like everyone I talk to is like kind of like Steven's character in The Holdouts, which I think is hilarious, is in that they're moving to all these different places. And, you know, they're like, you know, we it's great out here. You know, it's the new Brooklyn. Or we packed up, we left the city. We went to Costa Rica. We went to wherever, you know? So there's this exodus because it's so cost prohibitive. And when you think about the offer that our characters get and how much they're going to sell those apartments for, it's really not that much money.
Right. Yeah, that's the point.
And that's part, just to jump in, part of what we were, you know, again, we just did the pilot episode, but we can share like what we talked about in the writer's room is exploring also that outside world of like, where these people go and then, you know, what's that world out there in Croton-Hudson or, you know, Maplewood, New Jersey, or whatever.
Right. That's right.
You know, and so, you know, we take these characters out there. We can talk about, like, you know, some ideas we have for future episodes, but I think it's funny, you know, to play with the fact that, you know, Jace is trying to convince Kevin maybe to actually move out there at one point. Like, that could be funny.
Yeah.
Anything that could be funny, but that's funny. Yeah.
Kevin is the...
Kevin living in Croton, Hudson.
Yeah. We shouldn't say... No, we shouldn't say what happens at the end of the first of the pilot. That's a good thing not to mention, I guess. So it's... Where is the series is going to be on? Is it going to be on Amazon?
Yeah, so we released it on... It's on Vimeo. We wanted to put it out there to as many people who could see this series as possible. So we put
Vimeo or Vimeo on demand or
just Vimeo right now. It's not even on demand.
Just the pilot or
it's just the pilot.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good idea.
As many people to see it as we can. And that's the whole point because I think people need to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch the pilot.
What?
Watch the pilot.
Yeah.
Deirdre O'Connell. She's great. Great aunt.
Oh yeah. She's wonderful. She plays your
aunt.
Your aunt.
Yeah.
Or cousin. Aunt.
And
yeah, right.
She's my auntie.
In like Rockaway, or where is she supposed to be? I forget. She's somewhere. She lives somewhere
right
on the water.
She's all the way out, like living on a boat.
Yeah, right.
She's encouraging me to sell out, which is, you know.
Well, she's also she has another motivation. She loves you and wants you to be okay.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not because she's concerned about the rezoning of the neighborhood.
That's a big part of the drama.
That's
big part of the
well, that's one thing.
That's the big twist in the story. You mean it's for my own good? Yes. You just get the money. Take the money.
Yes. And
how can that be a good thing? How can that be a good thing? Tune in and watch The Holdouts.
That's right.
And find out.
That's right.
Wait, so where are the rest of the episodes? Now, once you reel them in, you're going to reel them in with that pilot, and then where do they see the rest of the season or series?
Well, we have to do them. We haven't done them.
So you only shot the pilot at this station.
We only shot the pilot. So we have a whole season.
So you have to raise the money for the... Is that what...
Well, we have to get a buyer. I mean, there's many different ways.
I got you. So you want a producer, like a producer platform.
Absolutely.
I got you now. I understand. Okay. Do you want me to put this, add that? Do you want me to leave that in, or do you want me to just take that part out?
I mean, I think it's important. I mean, I think it's important.
How do you
want
to maybe word it so that way it just sounds like, you know, like we have a lot of offers.
Right.
We're considering the various streaming platforms at the moment.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you guys tell me.
Mic.
I mean, I don't want
to
like
talking to the mic. Then.
I don't want to like make things up. I mean,
no, of course not.
You know, I mean, I could tell you a lot of fancy names and people are interested and stuff. But the deal is that here's the deal is that you got people see the pilot. It's got a lot. You know, the series is extremely sellable and extremely relevant right now.
Yes.
And I think it's just the right person has to come along and want to get behind it. And I think it's as simple as that.
I agree. Does anybody here know who Kaveh is? Kaveh Zahedi?
I do, yeah.
You know,
I mean, I don't know him personally, but I know of him, yeah.
All right. Because he also has a series. I introduced him to Brick, which is, you know, very much in the community and very much also, I think, does a lot of stuff around and they produced his series. So I'm putting it out there. That's all. So,
The show about the show.
And I'm in the pilot of that series because I introduced him to Brick. So we reenacted the meeting that I set up with Brick and Kaveh. They ended up giving him the money to make the series. Now his marriage is broken up.
I saw that.
Yeah, there was a big article.
Big article.
Yeah. So he's my current on the current episode. It's with Kaveh. I think it came out pretty good. Check it out. It's
I like it.
I'm plugging it, but
I do have faith that it'll get there for certain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're gonna make it happen.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
Oh, I couldn't hear you.
It's very funny.
Yes.
I
also Daphne Rubin Vegas.
I was going to mention that.
Yeah,
who did this episode?
The rest of the cast. We got a great cast.
Michael Buscemi, Daphne Rubin Vega.
Michael Buscemi, of course.
Nadia Dajani.
Nadia Dajani.
I don't know that person, but
Nadia and you have very good chemistry, Kevin.
Oh yeah.
You guys should think about getting married.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Well,
is that possible though?
It's not really, but...
You can get married on the show.
On the show.
Yeah.
And that could...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they got some unfinished business.
They have unfinished business.
That's right.
Who does she play? I can't remember.
She plays...
I just saw it for the second time.
His bartender de facto therapist.
Oh, got it. That's right. That's right. In the bar that is being, like everything else, co-opted by Wall Street types.
Eight-letter word in Queens, aqueduct.
Ah, yes.
That's one of my favorite lines.
Oh, yeah, the crossword. She does a crossword. Right.
Dinkins, side note, went to the U.S. Open, and they always give shout-outs to famous people.
Yes.
Alec Baldwin, standing ovation and clapping. Kevin, you like this
really?
One. Then they're like... And former Mayor Dinkins. And you just heard like a tennis ball. Like.
Is that like crickets in the tennis stadium?
Yeah. Whoa.
That's sad. That's not
that's
right.
Sad. Yeah.
He was ineffective, but he was a good guy, right?
But for someone like...
He was...
Yeah. I mean,
you know, he just didn't have the... You know. Anyway, that's another
podcast. Michael Buscemi is very good. He plays a rickshaw driver.
Yes.
And, you know, another person that we're having a lot of fun with in terms of like... Where does that storyline go? And I mean, can I talk about some of those ideas? Can we do that?
You could do anything you want.
Can we do anything?
Carte blanche.
I mean, you know, we love Mike Buscemi's character. Plays the rickshaw driver. Anyway, so he's like, what does this guy really do? And he's like wearing this dirty tank top and has one shoe on. And the scene that Kevin sees him in the bar. And we think that he really lives in like a Manhattan mini storage facility. Which people really try to live in these storage facilities.
Or work out of them, certainly, if they don't live there. And they may occasionally fall asleep by accident, in quote marks.
Have free coffee in the morning.
I did it.
You really?
That's right. Like, you did it.
When I did that, and when I got the script to an agent for like coverage or whatever, and they sent it back, and they were like, we like it, but there's one part where the guy lives in the Manhattan mini storage on Spring Street is not believable. And I was like, well, that's the one thing that's real in the entire
guys, you need to.
Pilot.
You have to come out and meet the real people.
I had those lights you slap that turn on inside.
Yes.
Yeah, the battery operated lights.
They give you coffee in the lobby.
Yeah.
And you go in there and change. And occasionally
you do it at I would do it at WeWorks, but they have much better security there.
That's the fun. That's where it starts. It's funny is the stuff people do to stay.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's that aspect of it, too. It's
that's
like
right.
Kevin and I would go out,
not
in the show, and then Kevin would be like, do we really need another fucking fro-yo? Like, I would see him get bent out of shape about new things. Do you remember the fro-yo rant? There was a frozen yogurt place that opened that really got him wound up.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, that's the show of when you stick around and you're just constantly annoyed by what your neighborhood has turned into.
Well, somebody asked before, what do you do when you sell your place when you make the buck?
Right.
But what do you do? Where do you go? And what's your next move? Well, sometimes it ends up you make these crazy trips. You end up living with somebody that you normally may not have chosen to do. Well, in this case, of course, they're already doing that, but that's, or you may end up like, you know, living in a storage unit somewhere.
I mean, all the
unofficially.
You know, all the characters in the pilot, we were playing around with living on the fringes. I mean, Kevin was saying his aunt, she lives on a houseboat.
Right.
You know, the rickshaw driver lives
Quincy lived on a, well, not Quincy. Who was it Quincy? Quincy. Did Quincy live on a houseboat? I think he did. There's a little bit
I can't believe you just made a Quincy reference. Wow.
Oh, I will.
I think Corrigan and I may be the only ones that got the Quincy reference.
I got it.
You got it?
Rockford lived in a trailer.
Ooh, now you're talking.
Rockford. Yeah.
Lived in a, right?
Yeah, that was a big fan.
Anyway.
Answering machine.
You know, and on the other side of it, Daphne Rubin Vega's character plays Kevin's sister. You know, she's sold out in another way where she's living in the high life luxury building and she just doesn't connect at all. But, you know, it's she's kind of sold out a part of herself. And that's interesting, too, you know, to actually live these in these glass tower buildings with the doggy bath and what else do they have?
And the poor door.
The poor door.
In some cases, anyway.
And like what that does to you if you're not really connected to it.
Yeah.
It could be very funny to explore, too. Yeah.
Yes.
I think that it's hard for people that come to the city now to really connect with kind of what I thought was so well done in the pilot is Kevin, our apartment. The look of it, the feel of it, the bathroom that's like a closet that's like a couple feet off the ground.
Oh, right.
And that feeling of a different New York that artists and creative people would come to and be able to find an identity in and be able to develop and foster their talents, their music, their painting. I think that, that New York is gone. You know, it's very expensive and corporate, and it's just about something else now. Mm-hmm. So I love seeing, I thought that, you know, I don't know, where did you guys get that apartment?
Yeah, I wanted to ask, and if that's the exterior is...
Producer, just, we have a great producer, and he scouted, location. And he, the true story is he sat, his name is Christopher Pike, and he sat outside these apartments on East, I can't remember, East 8th, was it?
7th.
7th. And he literally sat there a whole day, and he waited for people to exit the apartment. He said, oh, you live up there? Can I go up and see your apartment? We're shooting this.
Really?
Yeah. And he, until he met this guy, Elliot... what's his name?
Musician, Sharp, right?
He's a musician. He's a composer. Elliot Sharp. Thanks.
Oh, I know that name. Of course.
And he's a pretty well-known composer.
Yes.
And it was his apartment
that
we shot in. And he had one of those bathtubs in the kitchen.
Right.
It was an art director's dream.
Yes.
Because it already had a ton of analog sort of equipment and DVDs and albums, and you really didn't have to do too much set design involved. Yeah, and so perfect. And he was great. He was, you know, he even offered to do music for the series. So he, you know, a lot of people, the thing about the series is so many people have, you know, contacted us. Like Annabelle Shore has contacted me through Jace, through Facebook. Can I be in this thing? You know, like, you know, I know I'm plugging names here, but Nina's friends with Cyndi Lauper. She really wanted to be in the pilot, but she couldn't.
Uh-huh.
So, you know,
all these New Yorkers, too.
These are all New Yorkers who I think, you know, are like really identify with the subject matter.
Well, that's what's nice if you can. That's another helpful way to pitch, of course, the series when that comes, is that you're going to have, you know, a lot of like a real authentic New York cast, you know, or cameo, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's a really good selling point. Like, it's going to be, I think they'll, and once it becomes the cool thing to be on, you know.
We think so.
Well, you see, I remember when High Maintenance, throwing around these things, but it was started, of course, on Vimeo. It was YouTube, maybe. No, wait. Where it started Vimeo, then it was, I'm missing one thing before it went to HBO. It was on Vimeo.
It did YouTube, then Vimeo.
YouTube, it just started as they put him up on their own.
Yeah.
Then it went to like Vimeo produced it, unless I'm missing something, and then finally was bought by HBO. And so, you know, so it's, these things do happen, you know. That's a great story. I'm sure there's a few others that have also, I think the, what's it? I'm blanking.
Broad City.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Broad City is another example. Anyway. Yeah. Let's make it happen is what I'm saying. If you're listening, go watch the pilot. Start sending in your money and go into your mom's purse. Here's another obscure reference. Who said that? Do you remember? Go into your mom's purse and pick out the green paper and mail it to Soupy Sales. He got fired for that. Nobody knows that story?
No.
Soupy Sales lost one of his gigs. He had a children's show. And he told kids as a joke... So, yeah, got fired. There's nobody's laughing at this. Just go.
I'm laughing inside. I'm laughing inside.
Well, anyway, you got to see it. Watch it. It's. I think it's. We're going to have great success with it. I do. Do we want to mention anything else or talk about anything else?
I don't know. You know, I've never done these podcasts before, so I don't know what to say.
Well, you've been doing great.
Really?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, what, you know, like, we're just supposed to tease the audience, right? We're not supposed to tell them too much.
No.
I guess watch.
Yeah, that. don't give it away.
Don't give it away, right?
Did we give away anything?
What it's about, right?
I can't give it away. Give it 7th Avenue.
Oh, yes. Shmada, 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 shmada.
So,
great reference.
I like the beard you have in it. Can I?
Girasol.
Sunflower? No.
Sunflower.
Kevin, that was a good beard.
Yeah.
But I do you remember, I was watching and I remember how hot we were in that apartment. That's the hottest I've ever been in my entire life.
Oh, you were
and
sweating. Yeah.
We were shooting and it was so absurd because I was drenched in sweat and my shirt was completely soaked. And I was like,
yes, I saw.
Having had some experience working in the motion picture industries, I said, this is totally absurd. Like, there's no way.
Mm-hmm.
People, like, they should call some kind of unit to come and arrest someone because this is too hot. And we kept shooting, and we just, you know, Kevin's wearing that bathrobe, and they we just referenced it, how hot it is. And Kevin said the funniest thing. Would you say something like, who needs air conditioning? It's hot. Oh, so right. It's hot.
Right.
It's hot. Yeah. What do you want? It's hot.
Yeah, that was great.
And to me, I thought that was a great message for the show.
Do you remember that?
Kind of.
It's a great line. It reminded me a little bit of when I was watching, what was the name of that Noah Baumbach film?
Marriage Story?
No. About three films back where Ben Stiller and
Greenberg?
Naomi Watts. No, the one after that, I think, or two.
They lived in
the Only the Young, or When We Were Young.
Yeah,
when
We Were Young.
And they're sitting around, and they make some. They were trying to remember something, and Stiller pulls out his iPhone, and he's about to look at it, and Adam Driver goes, let's just not know.
Yeah.
Let's just sit here and not know. Because he's a hipster, and it was very, like, anyway, I don't have to explain it, I guess. It was a great line. Thank you, everybody.
We're done?
I don't want
to. It's coming. It's coming out now.
It's a little early. Well, let's say, Jace, you recently were on. You did the Ava DuVernay film.
Yes.
It's getting lined. A lot of the awards are being announced now.
And, when they see us, yes.
Right?
Yes.
When they see us.
Oh, yeah, man. Yes. Hey, congratulations.
Thanks, buddy.
Man, that's.
I play a really, really bad man. Yeah.
Really bad, bad man.
Bad man.
You all over that movie, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
that was
great.
Quite a...
Liberating? I don't know.
No. It's just terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, very terrifying.
You pulled it
experience.
Off, so.
Yeah, but also, I mean, that was 80s New York, late 80s New York. So our film, our pilot is not late 80s New York, but I identify with it because that's when my family came to New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I was
Where did
like,
they come from?
From Pittsburgh.
Okay, well, that's right.
But we came
that's why you were just there. Right?
Yeah, and I went to Xavier High School, and across the way lived Bernie Goetz. Bernie Goetz lived in an apartment building.
On 23rd.
And we, in our classroom at Catholic Xavier All Boys, we would all look out the window, and we would look at Bernie Goetz in his bathroom.
He was on 14th Street?
Yeah. I know, and it's right when that shooting happened. Yeah, we would all, a bunch of Catholic schoolboys looking at Bernie Goetz in his bathroom.
I don't know
Bernie Goetz. I don't even know if people know that are listening.
After the shooting.
After the shooting, yeah.
You know what? If you're at home and you don't know who Bernie Goetz is, just sit there and don't know.
Just don't know.
That's my advice. And not know.
Two train.
I've seen him. I've seen him on the, fortunately not on the subway, but I've seen him on the street.
Yeah.
Is he, right?
Kevin, please say something.
And Kevin, you're doing this, all very New York-centric show as well. The Godfathers, the...
Godfather of Harlem.
The Godfather of Harlem.
Yeah, that's
people
right.
like this show very much. Yes.
It's ended its run now. It's 10 episodes, and now it's on Epics.
Yes.
But they usually have it on, like, once it's been done, then they also, like, it'll be on, like, Hulu or one of those things, though.
I guess so.
I don't know, I'm guessing, but...
I think you can still see it on Epics.
Do that.
Yeah.
Did they post them every week, or did they put them all up at one time? I don't know how. It's on. Epics is a cable station.
Yeah.
Once a week.
But people like this very much. It's supposed to be very good. I have to catch all 10 episodes.
I know one guy who was watching it. You know, watching every episode. Mark Kozelik. He was a fan of the show. He's a fan of Godfather Harlem fan. He really liked it a lot.
Who else is in that show?
Giancarlo Esposito.
He's the best.
Yeah, he's great. He's done my show.
Vincent D'Onofrio, Forrest Whitaker.
I mean, come on.
Lightweights.
Great cast.
Just a bunch of lightweights.
Chaz Palminteri.
Don't know him.
Yeah, come on. That's a great cast.
Chaz Palminteri. Don't know him.
Yeah, Chaz Palminteri. Yeah.
Wow.
He's good.
What is your character?
He's good, man.
What's your...
No, he's very helpful to me anyway. It's from the makers of Narcos.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I haven't seen
it. That's good.
But it's about the mafia and the...
Right.
The Black Panthers and Nation of Islam. And it's set in 1964 in Harlem. It's about... Bumpy Johnson, played by Forrest Whitaker, he gets out of jail and he wants his turf back, but now it's under the control of the Italian mob. So there's some great scenes between Whitaker and D'Onofrio, I played D'Onofrio's underboss. He plays Vincent the Chin Gigante. I played a guy named Benny Eggs Mangano. He's a real guy. He's got his, look him up on Wikipedia. He's a World War II veteran, hero, war hero. Benny Eggs.
Benny Eggs.
And, but, yeah, Vincent kind of helped me out. He kind of helped me out. You know, I was like kind of, hey, I kind of needed a job, and he helped me out. He's a good, really good.
Wow.
I did a, Law and Order with him once, and I got killed, and I had to lay on the floor for hours.
Tough
he
job.
He was picking my brain apart on the floor.
Oh.
And I was so stiff, I couldn't move.
What do they do about your breathing?
And then he said, try laying on that floor for 3 weeks in a Stanley Kubrick movie.
And I thought, wow.
Whoa. Yeah, yeah. I got a Full Metal Jacket. I got the reference. He was giving me tips because when you lay on the floor, you think it's easy.
And a bathroom
and then
tile.
You try to stand up and you can't move anything.
Right.
And that was that's my only, right, you Cooper, have better stories than that. That's my only Vincent.
I have a laying on the ground story, dead story. It was me and this other guy who gets shot. This was on a different show, not Godfather Hall. But it was in Greenpoint. And it's raining like it is today. We had to lay there while there was like a page, like a half a page of dialogue left after our deaths. So we just had to stay there in the background dead. We were getting rained on. And the other guy was talking to me in between takes while we're lying on the sidewalk. He goes, so, you know, everybody thought I was crazy for wanting to getting to pursue an acting career in my 30s. And and look at you now. Look at us now. We're just lying here on Messerol Street. It's a real old part of Greenpoint. Well, all of Greenpoint is old.
Not for long.
I was lying there looking up at the fire escapes, the old style building, thinking, hey man, it's like the holdouts. It's like the holdouts, man. It's,
yeah. Well,
I'd rather
be
working on that show than lying here in the street like this. But, you know, it was hot in that house when we were shooting the holdouts.
It was hot.
You know, you just got to, you're always working under these really oppressive circumstances.
It's like a really sound guy hot, in the bathtub.
Really cold, really wet, you know. You know, we risk our lives doing this stuff. You know, we risk getting pneumonia. Yeah. You know,
does not go unappreciated.
No, but this is all seriousness. This was one that was worth it. It was very gratifying creatively working with Kevin and these two gentlemen and Nina and the rest of the great cast. And it was extremely fun. Right. Sometimes it's not fun and then doesn't turn out well.
Yeah, that's the worst case.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
But there's a
feeling we were going for, right?
That's
like, you
it.
Know, we were trying to like, you know, it's these days when you're making movies, you're making a TV show, I don't know. That's two different businesses now, making a TV series and making a movie. It's like some people, like, you know, Andrew Bujalski, you know, he's like, I can't make a TV series. I'm used to having a 2-hour story that kind of finds closure within that 90 or
just hasn't been offered
minutes.
The money.
That's becoming rare, though, that 2-hour.
No,
nobody
it's
wants
not,
to do
that,
the 2
no,
hours
hold
anymore.
On for a second. that's just kind of too snarky, all right?
I'm just
when
kidding.
That, when,
you know,
when,
I had the guy
when,
on
when,
several
when
times.
Bujalski says that, he means it. He's not a 10-episode series guy. He's not like, it's a great form. It's revitalized the careers of all of our great film actors. They're all on television
That's
now.
That's very true. But also,
but
I will say that he'll do
Bujalski still wants to make the traditional 90-minute film, you know, the sort of single shot feature. The three-act or no structure at all. The point I'm trying to make is, you're either telling a story or you're trying to create a mood. And I think that the essence of the holdouts and what we were trying to do to begin with, and what we were, was to create a mood about like a New York mood. Everyone kind of has their idea of what that is. Like, well, I'm from New York. I don't know. You know, I know what the old New York was like. And when did you move here? You know, you're always sort of checking each other's creds, you know? You don't know what it was really like. But every, you know, it's like, well, let's say, you know, I'm from New York of the 70s and 80s in the Bronx, you know? I mean, I don't even know that there was a difference between the Bronx and Manhattan. You know, I thought it was all New York City. You know, and you grew up in Manhattan, and Nadia Dejani, she grew up in the West Village, and like she knew Adam Horovitz, and she knew like she was around when the Beastie Boys started and stuff, and and I got to know her in the late 80s because we ended up, my first movie was called Lost Angels, and all these actors, you probably went in on that movie, right? You know, you didn't get in it, but he went in on it. You know, that everybody, all the actors our generation wanted to be in that movie so bad by Hugh Hudson. It was like it was supposed to be like a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest for teenagers. But it was, yeah, I remember meeting Nadia on that, and everybody, all the kids on that movie bonded. We all, Nina Shamashko, David Herman, who else? Well, some other, but we ended up going to Adam Horovitz's birthday party, like on October 31st, 1988, down on West Broadway, and then it turned into Nadia's pre-Thanksgiving, her annual like pre-Thanksgiving yes. party. She did it for years and years and years, and then stopped for a while. Now she started doing it again. But, you know, it wasn't until I met her that I realized that, you know, like the kids who grew up in Manhattan, you know, who started like rap music, right? Or the Beastie Boys anyway, like that they were the children of artists. Like, you know, Adam Horovitz, the son of Israel Horovitz, the playwright. I think Adrian Brody, his parents worked at the Village Voice, you know. You know, so I grew up in the Bronx. I didn't have like kind of show business connections or connections to the. Well, I can't say I didn't have connections to the culture because my mother was a lifetime member of the Art Students League up here on West 57th Street, and she's an artist. She went to the High School of Art and Design, and then went to the School of Visual Arts, and she sort of found her voice, her creative voice in New York City in the late 50s and the 60s, and she knew about like. The beatnik vibe. She hung out in like, you know, Cafe Reggio back when it was like, you know, people were snapping their fingers and it was like Bob Dylan was playing at the Gaslight, and you know
that hey, was, we watched Mrs. Maisel. We know what was
that
going
was
on.
Her New York. That was her New York, right. And that was the New York that the promise of that New York was attractive to me growing up in the Bronx. And so we're trying to, it's like, as long as we can just establish this mood, you know, like just get, you know, like just, you know, and that's all we need. You know, we kind of was like, well, we got to put a story to it. You know, what could it be about? And it's like, I don't know. I think I'm just trying to say it was kind of a, we were looking for a vibe, you know.
We got a little bit of like, it. I thought we kind of,
there's the Scorsese
it.
Vibe. There's the Woody Allen yeah. vibe. We were trying to find some kind of mm-hmm. New York vibe. Yeah. And,
that's a great yeah. way to.
We caught a piece of it.
I think it's a great way to sorry.
No.
To sum it up, I mean, we were, you know, we have to create our own.
You can
world.
Point the camera at anywhere, you know, in New York City, as long as the camera's rolling and you're catching it, and you watch it later, it's like, yeah, I know that street, you know.
Well, you got to have a vision for what you're doing, and yeah. That's what you're creating is. Create a vision for the series, and the vibe is another way.
Yeah, and some.
And by the way, don't chastise me on my own podcast.
Okay.
You know, Kevin's a member of the family circle, though.
Oh, that's true. This is your third. I guess you can third appearance on the podcast.
I want to say one more.
And
thing
I want there
too.
To be a fourth and a fifth. So.
The dad.
Yeah,
and I
so do I. yeah.
Oh, have you done? You've done a. He's
I know, but I might not
with
be one, on
with
anymore.
Andrew.
You're going
that's
now
the,
after
that's
this?
The insinuation.
No, there's no insinuation. You're definitely the Anthony. No, your first time with Andrew. In fact,
I have to make that
I don't
point.
Know if you remember that,
Adam? I
agree
you know.
With you. No, I agree. I was thinking maybe he did maybe a one-off like.
This whole interview is kind of like The Holdouts, where the tone of the conversation goes back and
it's
forth
true.
From drama to comedy.
It's true.
We don't
Tension.
Really know what we want it to be here.
Attention.
We're just kind of spitballing and trying to.
That's the show. You know. Listen to the podcast. It's kind of. Oh. It's true. What were you saying, Steve? You were trying to say. I understand. That's what you're
I don't know anymore. I was just trying to say that yeah, the spirit, the mood that Kevin was talking about, right? That, you know, like you gotta, things are changing.
That's up to you and Dan to some degree.
And we were comfortable, like things are changing in New York, right? So like it's gonna change. Things, you can't really stop it, but you could try to save something from not dying, right? So like, you know, you could try to save this world that we're trying to create. This guy, you know, you got to stand up against like these forces. Like, well, there's something worth saving. And I was thinking about before you guys came, like when I lived in Paris, what I loved and what was funny about Parisians when I lived there is they will do anything they can to save the whatever they can about their culture and
that's
their language.
True.
They will go crazy. They don't care. They're like, no, things are changing. Computers and you're going to order online. They're like, no. I think this, they'll fight to the ends to save their culture from changing. And I think it's funny and it's desperate and you got to do it because if you don't do it, who's going to do it? And it's like, that's where this drama and this comedy, it is a fine line, but that's where we're coming from, where I could say in the room, in the writer's room, is just like, you know, Kevin will do whatever he can, and he enlists Jace to help him to save this thing that's eventually going to change, but he'll fall doing it.
Yeah.
But he's gonna go all the way.
Right, and that's nicely summed up in that maybe it's the penultimate scene in the landlord's office. Where, you know, what happens there is a nice way to sum that up. Like
with the great Chris McKinney, who's also just really wonderful and also a New Yorker. I don't know where Chris is from. I think he's from Brooklyn. He went to Juilliard. He's a great actor, and he plays the landlord. And the son is played by Francis Mateo, who's also a New Yorker. He's from Washington Heights.
It's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, is that it?
Thanks, buddy.
Well, you know, we're gonna hopefully maybe there'll be another when the subsequent episodes are produced, we'll get back and we'll keep plugging away.
Dan, can you pass me that seltzer over there?
Buddy. Yeah.
No, I'm dehydrated.
I got it. I'm on it.
It's perfect. It's like an hour.
Really?
Yeah.
I never did this before, so I don't know what I'm
There's saying. No rules. Some of my segments are 20 minutes. Some of them, you know, like... Everybody, we'll be back in a week with a brand new episode. What's coming up, I think, on the next episode, I believe, we have a director named Cody Stokes with a film called The Ghost Who Walks, and we will have the author of a new book about the making of Chinatown called The Big Goodbye, and it will be available shortly, and we have its author, San Masson, coming on the show. And then we also have an episode with returning friend of the podcast, filmmaker Lynn Sachs, as well as returning writer, poet, creative Nick Flynn is coming back on, all coming up in the next few weeks, and of course, much, much more. So just keep on listening. Share the word about Film Wax Radio. Thank you so much. My name is Adam Chartoff. As I just mentioned, the name of this podcast is Film Wax Radio. Care of yourselves and the ones you love. Until next time.
Broken lines, broken strings, broken threads, broken springs, broken idols, broken heads.